Footy Roundup here, back in action. The boys are indeed back. It's been a couple week break now. Maddie, how did the vacation treat you?
Yeah, it was great. I went home back to Nova Scotia and visited my parents, which was, of course, fantastic. And came back to Toronto and chilled out for a little before we're back here at school and back up and running with Footy Roundup.
I played a little golf in Sundan in Florida. It was a tough life.
Oh, that sounds pretty nice to me. It was nice to hear our music back on the air as well.
Yeah, I missed it as well. I mean, it's no rest for the weary when you look at what's been going on with Toronto FC. The carousel continues to spin over there.
Our last show before going on vacation was pretty much talking about how TFC are, you know, destined to finally break the playoff, you know, get in there and make their first playoff appearance. And we come back and our first show back and the head coach is gone and it's all gone downhill. Michael Bradley, I don't know what, you know, with his situation, like it's just all gone downhill now. And it's been a catastrophe really, Rob.
Yeah, the carousel just continues to spin. It's almost like the franchise is chasing its tail. Every time we think, you know, the progress is happening and they're reaching that next step and level of respectability, something like this just happens that pulls the rug out from under all the fans.
It's like one step forward, two steps back every year.
Perpetually. It never ever stops with them. And I remember, Maddie, on the show, I did leave the door ajar. Remember I said 85%.
Yeah,
I said, you never know at TFC. Not expecting this, but, I mean, not entirely surprised based on their track record.
I was a little more confident. I was almost like 90%, 95% they'd be in the playoffs. But, it baffles me. Just every year there's something with TFC that happens. And, you know, you feel the air sucked out of this whole city. Like, I was reading...
It's just perpetual rebuilding all the time. A ninth coach in 8 seasons.
Like, I was reading a story, actually, I wrote earlier this year about Defoe and Bradley's press conference and how excited everyone was. You know, that the fans were singing. Defoe and Bradley were like, we can't wait to turn this team into a perennial contender. And it's just all gone downhill. It's, you know, we're 7 months down from that press conference, and it's just all gone terribly wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bloody big deal campaign seems a little ridiculous. It's a bloody bigger deal at this point, I guess.
Yeah, in a way, you're kind of lost for words because I don't think anyone fathomed this. They did so well. You know, they went to Seattle first game of the season, won 2-1 with Defoe scoring twice. And
so quickly, what, 11 minutes in or something?
Yeah, I mean, you just sat there thinking, they finally got this figured out.
Finally got the talisman,
They actually finally, they did have it figured out for like, you know, half of the season. And, you know, they've just gone downhill. Like, they haven't won. They're not winning games anymore. They're losing badly. They don't have a manager now. Well, they do obviously have the intern
Vanny, from the academy.
From the academy, yeah. But, I guess...
See, Matt, I'm a big proponent of when there's smoke, there's fire. And for me, things didn't sit well when I saw Tim Leiwicki resign. I mean, he was the architect, in my estimation, who turned all this around. He had a positive influence on the Raptors. He was starting to influence himself on the Leafs as well with the Shanahan appointment. And then all of a sudden, I'm leaving at the end of next season, or summer of next season, I believe, 2015, to pursue other interests. I mean, every inclination for me, and I think most people who watched the conference, was he was going to be here for a while to turn this around. I can't help but, you know, speculate that something happened in the higher up that made him unhappy to leave, and the trickle down to Defoe and the rest of the roster, I think, is really concerning for the long term for this team.
MLSC is quite the... quite the company.
Quite the monolith, huh?
It really is. Like, the way they operate and, you know, guys are in and out constantly, it seems.
Revolving door, yeah.
I mean, I guess if you really want to look at it, Rob, is actually going back to the hiring of Ryan Nelson, because TFC hired a guy who was actively still a player and had never taken a single coaching course in his career, in his life, actually.
And he was still an active player, was he not?
Yeah, it just didn't make any sense to me. It was when at the time of the hiring, I was like, "Hang on a second! I saw this guy play in the Premier League last weekend."
With Defoe, actually.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. It is really mind-boggling. They hired this guy in the first place, and you know, I thought he had it figured out for the first half of the year. I mean, obviously, when you bring in Defoe and Bradley, that probably is going to happen, especially in MLS. But it's just gone to pot, and obviously the comments over the weekend.
Is there any doubt that, you know, Bazbachenko, like, he just decided based on Nelson's comments that was it? I am not buying this, like, this was in the pipe for a long time. He might have thought about it in passing, but, I mean, clearly the comments played a big role in that decision.
Right, and I don't, like you said, I think it was absolutely impulse, like, oh, well, he's undermining us, he doesn't respect us, whatever he might have been thinking. And he said, well, we're just going to can you because, in theory, we have a reason to, because the team hasn't been playing up to par in the last 6, 7, 8 weeks. So,
what did you think about Bazbachenko's comments about putting the pressure on the team in it being a big game? Did you think that was off, out of bounds a little bit? I didn't think it was that bad.
General managers, I sometimes feel, have this way of like trying to influence things a little too much. And I think that might have been one of those cases. I don't think the team knew they were struggling. And I don't think the last thing they wanted was a general manager to walk in and say, oh, you guys need to start playing better because we're not making the playoffs.
But can can you really disagree with what he said, though?
No, you can't. Yeah. I mean,
even when you watch the style of play Toronto's had, they've large spells, they've not had held possession very well.
Right.
They haven't created nearly enough with, I think, a pretty strong roster. And I think Bazbachenko was right on the money when he said that they're not producing and they're not creating enough for what they have. For what they have, they should be doing better.
Right. And, you know, the other thing with Defoe is that, you know, I read the other day, he's sixth. He's already sixth in franchise history in goals scored.
That didn't take long. Third of a season?
Maybe a dozen MLS games. Because, he's been injured for a bit as well. Like, he's been in and out with injury. He was suspended for a game as well because of yellow cards and... I don't know. I mean, Defoe is, don't get me wrong, has been fantastic for TFC, but he's missed a few too many games to my liking. Obviously, injuries are part of the game. And I guess looking forward, Rob, QPR made this like £11 million bid, reportedly for him. TFC said, no, we're going to turn it down.
Matty, I got to tell you, I thought Defoe was as good as gone.
Yeah, I did too. And I don't see how he doesn't make it out, how he's going to be around next season.
Is there any way that he lasts past January unless they go on a really torrid run of some sort?
I still don't think so. I'm not even sure if them winning the whole MLS Cup would even keep him here.
Yeah,
I really don't. I think
because then he'd be going out on top too, hypothetically, right?
Technically, right? I can't see any way Defoe is going to be here next season.
I will say it was smart on Bazbachenko not to sell him, in my opinion. I think just from a sheer PR perspective, it would have been an absolute disaster. After building an advertising campaign around him, finally having someone who's able to put the ball in the back of the net and then just let him go to the highest bidder, that wouldn't sit well with fans. It's not a North American tendency to be like, well, we got value back from him. Nobody cares at the end of the day in this city. They want Toronto to win, and they're sick of Toronto not being in the playoffs and any type of profit coming back. It's just lining the pockets of MLSE, and I don't think the average fan would care about that at all.
Right, and I mean, also looking to next year, you've basically got people signing up for season tickets because of Defoe and Bradley. And
yeah, where does Bradley go now?
That's one question. We'll address that in a second. But TFC fans are getting kind of screwed here too, because they're disappointed and upset because their on-field product is a shambles, right now anyway. They have no, their coach is being fired, their GM is making all these statements, their best player seemingly doesn't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
Their other best player in Bradley.
Question mark.
I don't know what that guy's going to do because he's in the prime of his career and he's stuck playing for TFC right now, as harsh as that might sound. When, Benfica have been chasing him for years, it seems, he left Roma and he's been in the Premier League.
I know, we talked about it off air too. I could totally see him going to a bigger market like in New York.
Yeah.
An Orlando to try to put that team on the map.
Yeah, I think Orlando, they already have Kaká signed. And
true.
Rabinho is apparently going to be one of their other DPs. So I'd be surprised they brought in Bradley with three midfielders.
Trying to turn that to Brazil North, huh?
Yeah, it seems that way, right?
Roberto Carlos is next in line.
Ronaldinho maybe might come down, or old school Ronaldo.
We need a sweeper. Is Dunga available?
Yeah. Cafu might be coming out of retirement for a bit. The new New York team might appeal if he said he maybe wants to stay in North America.
His wages are certainly right.
They are. So, and the new New York team would be good potentially with, Lampard and Vila. I mean, we're speculating here because we really don't know if Bradley's going to be staying or going. I mean, it'd be nice if he stayed, but like Defoe, I wouldn't bet too much on it now.
See, for me, the biggest issue still comes back to Tim Leiwicki. He was the difference and, the variable that wasn't the same from previous regimes. And then all of a sudden, these players come in. So he had to play a huge role in this. And when he's not a part anymore...
See, this is the thing. It was Leiwicki who brought Beckham to MLS in Los Angeles. And there were some rumors going around, nothing ever confirmed, but underneath the radar that... Leiwicki's last major contribution to MLSC was bringing Defoe and Bradley in, because I'd read that he was thinking he wanted to move on, which is now what he's done. So to some people, it might not seem the writing was maybe on the wall at all, because that's what I did read, that was his last major contribution. But regardless, I mean, at the end of the day, he brought these guys into TFC to make this team better and they could compete for championships and, win the Canadian Cup and all that, which they failed to do. All these other things. And, at the end of the day, TFC has... gone back to the TFC we know, as much as I hate to say it. It's like the TFC that just every year fails us almost.
There's no successful not just even in sports, Maddie, but organizations in general that I know of that have a perpetual lack of continuity and succeed.
Oh, it's insane.
And here we are again with a changing of regimes. And I'm just thinking what you said about Bradley may ring true. He may not be here much longer because he may not agree with the direction management seems to be going in for the umpteenth time.
Right. And I mean, like, don't get us wrong. Like, there has been some really good moments this season.
For sure there has, yeah. It's hard to not seem overly critical right now because, I mean, it's still been the best season they've had.
I was about to say, this is probably still their best season they've ever had, and they're still well in the playoff hunt, which people seem to forget because they've just struggled so much recently. And, you know, take out Defoe and Bradley, you know, Luke Moore has been, fantastic. I've said it all season long, he's been my best player outside of Defoe and Bradley. Odoro's been great.
Osorio's had some nice stretches.
Exactly.
Too.
Yeah. You know, it's just, you know, I think it'd be nice if Caldwell could get back on the field. I think there's been some really, really good.
Even Hagelin's developed pretty well too, actually.
Exactly. Apart from that own goal against DC, which was shockingly bad. But you know, I think overall you have to say like this is a good. It has been a good season, and it. But firing Nelson now doesn't really make much sense.
I'm surprised at the timing. That's why I feel like it has to be a bit of a personal issue from Vezbachenko because, like we were discussing, I mean, they're in their best position they've ever been. They're seemingly having the best season they've ever had. How does it hurt to let him see it through? And if it fails, then just let him go anyway.
Right. I mean,
it has to just become untenable at this point. That's the only thing.
If they don't make the playoffs, then all right, that's maybe grounds to fire him. He's had 2 years to figure it out.
Because you know now the spin's going to be the new coach is going to come in. If they struggle for 2 or 3 games, he's getting to know the guys and trying to understand his formation and tactics. Like, how do you have time for that in the middle of a playoff push?
I hate to bring this up because it still kills me to this day, but my team in England, Bristol Rovers, we were struggling last season in the relegation battle, and the team fired our manager with like 7 games left, and we got relegated. You just can't physically do
that. It might have happened anyways, but it's like you're hampering your team like right ahead of it.
You bring a new manager in, and you know, every now and then you bring a new manager in and your team suddenly wins 5 straight, which does happen, but not all that often. I don't probably foresee it here with TFC. But firing your manager at crucial times with not much time left in the season doesn't tend to help your club. And I mean, I guess, Rob, the big question here is, can TFC actually still make the playoffs despite all the
They still can. I mean, they're in good stead. They have games in hand on both the Revolution and the Crew, who they're tied with right now on 33 points. But I'm not feeling as optimistic. I would put it below 50-50, to be honest. I just see the tendency of, you know, these seeds of discontent when they've happened in the past and how they fester in this city and with this team. I'd say they could still make it, but my chances are maybe around 30 or 40% now instead of 85.
Yeah, I'm going to be still optimistic because I think they can still turn it around because, you know, Gilberto was, you know, actually playing really well recently. You know, we've mentioned Bradley and Defoe and Oduro, and these guys are playing
but
well.
But what about Defoe, Matty? Is he going to play again, or is he just going to milk this injury for all it's worth if he's as upset as they say, or the media says he is?
You would hope he's respectful enough to actually, you know, compete and play. I mean, I watched Defoe obviously in the Premier League a lot, and he's never come across as that kind of guy who would just sit out when he has no reason to sit out. So I think he'll be fine. I still don't really foresee him staying, but I think he'll play this season out, and he'll try and help TFC. He knows what's at stake for the club. You know, that first playoff berth, which would be huge for the city and the team still, regardless. So
put a percentage on it, Matty. I'm saying 40.
I'm going to be higher. I'm still going to say 55.
55, edging it.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. They have
games in hand. Well, our fingers are both crossed regardless. I hope that they finally break this.
We do, because the city needs it, the team needs it, the fans need it. It's so desperately needed in this city. And, you know, after all the buzz at the start of the year and how good they were going to be, it's... You know, and they have been good. It's just the balloon's being punctured right now, and he's blowing up again. So
it's incredible how quickly things can go off course. I mean, you never know for sure. Yeah, what's happening behind closed doors at a corporate level, and then it just starts to kind of rot from within a little bit, and it's really unfortunate to see it. But hopefully, like as we said, they do turn it around and are able to make the playoffs.
But I mean, there's like 7 teams fighting for three playoff spots. With 5 points,
it's going to go to the wire.
It's going to be cracking. I'll say that much. It's going to be fantastic watching how this figures out.
Maddie, moving on to the EPL.
Yep.
Our predictions. I believe someone here had Chelsea topping the table, and someone here had Manchester United. Your thoughts so far?
I'm pretty sure I said Man City, and not Man United.
Revisionist history here on Footy Roundup.
They've only played 3 games, so they still have 35 games left yet, but it's not looking good for United, is it, Rob?
No, it's definitely a slow start. And actually, I was reading a soccer book recently on the history of the EPL, And Mourinho's strategy when he first came over to the EPL, and he was talking a little bit about his rivalry with Ferguson, Matt. And he said that Fergie's teams tend to get hotter as the season goes on.
That is
But Mourinho says that he likes to push his guys at the beginning because 3 points at the start are still 3 points at the end, and it makes you that much harder to catch if you can maintain your steam.
No, you're right. I mean, United are 7 points behind Chelsea already. They played 3 games.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? Like,
yeah, it's already a nice little lead.
That's insane. Like, you're already, Man United are already thinking, well, we got to start winning all our games. We have to beat Chelsea once.
Chelsea's got to drop some.
Probably draw at least once with Chelsea in the other game. Hope Chelsea drop point. Like, it's like they're 7 points, 3 games.
Yeah, it's almost absurd, really. Man United right now, 14th in the table.
14th in the table, 2 points.
And struggling to score, strangely.
Yeah, which is also odd. I mean, Van Persie didn't play the first game, and Rooney did have the goal, and... Okay, just clarification here as well. Rooney's so-called bicycle kick in that opening game is not goal of the season contender. For all those people out there who started... I was watching, like, it wasn't the United game I was watching. I was watching something else. And Twitter started blowing up this Rooney goal, and it was like, goal of the season, goal of the season. I was like, really, already? So I went and found the highlight. He's like a, you know, a backwards volley from like 4 yards out. Like,
would that even place in the top 10 at the World Cup?
No, it wouldn't even place in the top 10 at the end of the season. Like, it's, all right, so we can calm that down. But United... shambolic start, and then, you know, aside from the fact that they, you know, aren't doing well in the league, they get hammered 4-0 by MK Dons in the League Cup, which I don't.
Yeah, Louis van Gaal's Louis van Gaal supposed impact is not there yet.
No, not just yet. But
how
guess,
about the big signings?
Yeah, I for a team who doesn't have, well, not that the Carling Cup really counted because no one really cares about that anymore. But for a team that's not playing Champions League football or even Europa League football. To bring in Falcao, Di Maria, and Blind is...
a stud player at each part of the park.
It's phenomenal. It's, yeah. It's amazing. I mean, I think...
I mean, Welbeck went out the door, but I think a Falcao for Welbeck trade, who wouldn't take that?
Exactly. Yeah. Who cares, right?
Potential aside, I mean, right now, Falcao is a better player.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, he's been the best player of the last 5 years. I mean...
Speaking of Welbeck, though, that's very much an Arsenal-type move,
it
wouldn't
is,
you say?
It doesn't... I don't think it really addresses their problem.
No, but it's another like slick, creative player that Wenger loves to have in his lineup, and he poaches it from Man U, so he's happy about that. But
I
having
don't think
said
Man
that,
U care about losing
yeah,
Welbeck.
Because Man U still improved anyways. Exactly. At the end of the day,
I don't,
still greater.
The Welbeck signing, like, he's a good player, and you know he is an England starter. Don't get me wrong, but I know if I mean it's basically a signing because Giroud's out for the next 3 months with that. I believe it's a broken foot, or something along those lines. So that's basically what he's been signed for. But you know he's going to be partnering Alexis Sanchez. I still don't understand how Lukas Podolski doesn't play enough. That baffles me still, considering how good his
yeah,
record is.
Yeah, you feel like he could fit in that lineup.
But somehow, I don't know what the problem is there, but he's not playing much.
The other team, Matty, that's impressed me, I think Liverpool's done a good job so far.
Yeah,
they also
have.
Brought in Mario Balotelli, which will help a lot. Lovren's been very good on the back line. He scored in Liverpool's first game for them. He seems to be developing a good off-the-field relationship with Stevie G, like we talked about before. I think this team, their arrow's trending upward for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, they got hammered at Man City Monday night, well, like nine days ago now. Which, you know, Liverpool, like every one of the, you know, the big four teams or big five teams, they're always going to get hammered once or twice on the road to one of the other big teams. So this is one of Liverpool's for the year. But to go to Tottenham at the weekend and beat them 3-0, I actually got a
convincing.
I don't tend to get up too often for the early games. I'm not going to lie to you here, but I got up for this because you know, Tottenham and Liverpool, it's going to be a good game.
Yeah.
It was a good game if you're a Liverpool fan because they absolutely destroyed them. It was. Maybe game of the season. Well, hang on. Let me say that again. Second game of the season because Everton 3, Chelsea 6 was pretty good. So,
how do you feel about the Balotelli signing? I like it, and I think it's a calculated risk. I mean, we know he's a very combustible personality. So was Luis Suarez, though, and he had a lot of success there. And we were talking previously on other episodes about how Liverpool had to try to kind of fill that void. Personality-wise, and when he's on, I wouldn't say it's a like-for-like trade, of course.
No,
I mean,
it's
I think
not,
we know Suarez is better. But with what was out there in the market, I think it was a smart move.
I think it's a great signing.
Yeah,
like he actually should have probably had a hat-trick in the Spurs game.
He created quite a bit, and a deep shot on the volley, too.
Yeah, he really should have had maybe two goals at least in that game. I think he's been fine. I mean, they've written this clause into his contract that says, you know, if you start messing around, we're going to fine you, suspend you. So, you know, Balotelli's one of those guys, in my opinion, who can get out of hand, but everything he does on the field outweighs any potential problem you have with him.
I think you
like
need
Suarez,
a personality like that in the lineup sometimes, too.
Yeah, because Liverpool's lineup is pretty actually kind of serious if you think about it. Like, there's, yeah, I mean, you don't want jokers. Like, yeah, we're not saying that at all. But you kind of do want a guy who isn't afraid to get stuck in and mix it up if you needed to be. And Balotelli is absolutely that guy. So, you know, full marks for that signing. And they got him at a pretty good price as well. So I think it was £16 million. So pretty good money when all is said and done.
Maddie, moving on to my Chelsea side a little bit. Costa's been in fantastic form for them. Brilliant. Just pumping in the goals. He is now nursing an injury, which is a little bit of a concern.
But he was also supposed to not play at the weekend.
That's true. And look at that 6-3 goal fest. I wonder if a little money was made on that game betting the over.
That was a great game. Like I said, game of the season already. So,
and a lot of the goals, you felt like the goalie didn't have a chance too, but it was almost like every time someone was in the box, it would go in.
But like, you know, Chelsea would go up 2 goals and then Everton would score right away and then 5 minutes past, they'd go 5-3 and then it was suddenly like, it was out of control. It was such a great, exciting game, which Premier League football at its finest. You know, if you're an Everton fan, you leave that game and you're like, well, all right, we saw a cracking game. I'm not going to complain.
They fought back a couple times. Even though the score looks bad, I don't think they were rolled as bad as
No, they weren't rolled that bad.
Too. Yeah.
How about Stephen Naismith scoring 3 goals in the league season already? That guy never scores. And like, he's like second goal scorer in the league behind Diego Costa, who has been worth every penny so far. I think they have a massive, their best player so far for Chelsea this year. Well, Thibaut Courtois has been brilliant on a side note, but Cesc Fabregas has been just fantastic. Some of his through balls, the opening game of the season when Chelsea went to Burnley and won 3-1, his setup for the first goal, I think might have been even for Costa, was... I sat there, I was watching it with my dad on my computer because we didn't have Sportsnet World for that, to watch that game. And the Fabregas sees the field in ways that should be illegal at times. Like, for me, like, Fabregas, when he was at Arsenal, I always knew how great he was. Then obviously he went to Barcelona and you kind of just forgot about him a little. Because when you're in a team with Iniesta and Xavi, Sergio Busquets,
couldn't even break
Messi,
in consistently
Neymar,
there.
It's so tough. And Mascherano, like, it's so tough. And you kind of, I'll be honest, I forgot how good he was. And he came back in that Burnley game, I was like, right, that is exactly the Fabregas I remember. So
are you saying, Maddie, when I mentioned Costa and Fabregas being the difference for Chelsea, that I may have been onto something? Is that being admitted on air right now?
Oh yeah.
You want to switch your pick to Chelsea?
No, I'll stick with United. I stick with my guns, but I mean, United are just trying to make the Champions League this year, it seems, right? I mean, that's what they got to be looking at right now.
I mean, all kidding aside, what United added, I think, is going to really push them back into contention here. It's super, super early. At the same time, all points are very important, but I expect them to make it much closer than what we've seen so far. They're not going to be rotting at the bottom like this.
Also, before we move on to La Liga and Bundesliga and Serie A for a couple of minutes on each, quick shout out to Swansea City. 3 games, 3 wins. Obviously, the 2-1 win at United to start the season. 1-0 home win to Burnley, and then they beat West Brom 3-0 at home.
It's funny to see them and Villa at the top of the table, though.
The season always starts with some team who is like, yay, we're really good, and they end up being mid-table by the end of the year. So
Maddie, moving on a bit, as influential as Costa's been for Chelsea, I would say that it worked out well for Atletico, too. Mario Mandzukic has been fantastic for them and already become a Simeone favorite, like I speculated.
One of your Croatian boys is doing extremely well. I mean, that, you know, they beat Real Madrid 1-0 in the I don't know what the official Spanish name is for like their community shield, as we call it in England, but when the two, like, the league champion plays the league cup winners or the FA Cup winner in the game, Atletico won 1-0. I think Mandzukic scored, what was it, like 35 seconds.
It was early. It was in the first couple minutes, and I think it was a header again.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, it was, you know, Mandzukic's been great for Atletico. You know, Atletico have a win and a draw so far this year. So, you know, it's Their transfer market has been all over the place. Like, they brought in Griezmann. They just brought in, 1 second here, Rob, I have it, Alessio Cirsi from Torino, who is a really good Italian player. So, you know, Atletico, or, you know, they've lost some guys, obviously Costa, and they also Luis went to Chelsea as well. But they're going to be good for the season. I still don't see them winning the league. Barcelona are 2-for-2 this season, 2 wins, whereas Real Madrid, I mean, they won their first game, but then they were 2-0 up on the road to Real Sociedad and blew their lead and lost 4-2, which is, like, Real Sociedad, you know, they were a Champions League team last season, if you remember, with Griezmann, before he obviously went to Atletico in the summer. Carlos Vela was part of that team, some other good players. But that was,
I mean, Real was playing without some guys. They're a little bit banged up, but I mean,
their depth is still better than
That's what I was getting at here. Like, it really shouldn't matter with how much they have on the bench, wouldn't you agree?
No, completely. I mean, their depth is, I've seen some stuff on the web about, you know, their second team is better than probably 95% of world teams. You take out probably the big boys in, you know, England, Italy, and
Maddie,
Germany.
It's the Spanish Super Cup, incidentally, that
Spanish
you were talking
Super
about.
Cup.
Yeah.
Okay, so there it is. So, I mean, you know, and the good thing of Atletico, like, they won the league last year, obviously heartbreaking the Champions League, but this now is already a successful season for them. They have a trophy in the trophy cabinet. They can move on in the league. They have the Champions League, obviously, coming up. So, you know, I don't think Atletico can be written off because they've made some really good signings. Like, you know, I'm really hard on Antoine Griezmann, as you know.
Yeah.
So they're going to be fine. Real Madrid, you know, that Real Sociedad game is just a blimp in the road, I guess.
Just, I think, the sheer scrappiness of Atletico, too. They're just not intimidated by their rivals
at all,
even on
paper.
Well, when
your coach is a borderline nutcase.
To that end, I think we got some information to share with him.
This is fun. So, for those of you who don't know, Diego Simeone, the head coach at Atletico, is currently suspended for 8 games. Here is the official breakdown taken from USA Today, and this will make you laugh because it's great. I quote, Simeone was suspended for 4 games for tapping the back of the assistant referee's head, 2 games for protesting, 1 game for applauding his sending off, and 1 game for remaining in the stands instead of going to the changing room after his expulsion. End quote. It's just
after his expulsion, it's like he was like naughty at the school teacher or something.
Oh, it's the guy. I mean, the guy is a nutcase, but don't tell me he's not entertainment. He is fantastic for
Maddie,
the game.
To me, the hilarity and the absurdity is how broken down this suspension is. Somewhere along the lines, they've decided 4 games for tapping ahead. Is it 5 for striking?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
right?
2 games for protesting? What if there was more profanity? Would it be 3? And then one for applauding. That's unreal.
The applauding is still one of my favorite things to see.
And as if that wasn't enough, the final nail in the coffin is he still watches even when he was told to be ushered off.
It's just brilliant.
The man's too hilarious.
A quick move over to the Bundesliga. 2 games in as well. So, you know, the regular seasons are just starting. There's an international break. There's friendlies today and then
friendlies
Euro
tomorrow and then the Euro qualifying next week.
It starts at the weekend. So, you know, it's off the weekend for all the domestic leagues. But in Germany, I don't know if it's a surprise because everyone just assumes Dortmund and Bayern Munich will be at the top of the table. But it's actually Bayer Leverkusen this year. And their actual first game of the season was a 2-0 away win at Dortmund. So don't tell me they don't deserve it. Dortmund,
yeah, it's a legit
you know,
result.
They won their other game, and Munich have drawn one game and drawn one. They drew away at Schalke 04. Schalke is always that tough little like fifth or sixth team in Germany that, you know,
Tottenham-y almost. In a
yeah,
way.
That's Everton and Tottenham basic yeah. version of Germany. I mean, that's what they are. They're good. I'd be really curious to see how. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not expecting Bayer Leverkusen to win the league this year, but I'd be curious to see if they can keep it up. You know, winning away at Dortmund to open your season is a great result. So, you know, be curious to see if they can keep it up moving forward, but I expect Bayern Munich to come back and just kind of trot upon and
seconded. I think they'll figure it out and get that going and still take that league.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Moving to the Serie A quickly, Matty, initial thoughts?
The season started last weekend, and obviously we didn't do our preview because the season was still so far away before we took our vacation. I tweeted, so to confirm, but my pick for the season is Roma.
Bias.
Maybe. I am a Roma fan, but I genuinely believe this is the year they're finally going to come. You know, they started off great last year, kind of dwindled away during mid-season and kind of pushed back up towards the end. So I think this year, I think Juventus losing Conte as their manager is huge. I think Roma, you know, Rudy Garcia, they brought in some great signings. They still have Totti, De Rossi, you know, all these guys. So they're going to be ready to go. I do think they're going to win this league. A little bit of the pick is with my heart. I'm not going to deny that because I'd be naive to say that it isn't, but I look at the other teams, you know, Napoli, I still don't know how they have Hamsik in that team and he hasn't left yet, but he's always a threat, and Napoli are always good. AC Milan, I think, are going to be good this year. Fernando Torres is on board now for 2 seasons on loan. So, and Inter Milan, they drew their first game of the season. Roma, Juve, Napoli, and Milan all won, but Inter Milan aren't quite back to the powerhouse we know them to be, and Lazio actually lost to Milan, so those are the top 6 teams in Italy, as always, I guess, but...
So we share our Bayern prediction, Matty. I'm throwing my hat in on the Juve train until proven otherwise. They're an institution in Italy, and I'm going a little bit safe with my pick on that, I guess, but...
It's not a bad pick. I mean, Juve are still Juve, right? I mean, it's just... You know, they dominate that league. They've dominated it for years. And
quickly, before we run out of time here, Matty, some of the other transfer news. We've gone through what United did, which was huge. We mentioned Balotelli to Liverpool, Welbeck to Arsenal. Torres to AC, you mentioned quickly. You think worth the gamble?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always felt Torres, he's been bad for Chelsea. See, he's been bad at Chelsea. I said it myself right there, but I actually don't think he's as bad as people think he has been.
Yeah. You know, maybe just stylistically, he's just not fitting in with that team.
Yeah.
He was great at Liverpool.
He was fantastic at Liverpool. Yeah. And, you know, it's... you know, the away goal that got Chelsea into the Champions League final away at Barcelona, for example, people tend to forget that. You know, he did a lot. I mean, he didn't live up to expectations, but going to Milan, I think, is a great move for him. It's a new country, it's a new start. So
the other one that jumps out at me too is Chicharito Hernandez. Yeah. Strange, bizarre, head scratching move for me. Couldn't get into the team at Man U, but apparently thinks he will at Real.
This one didn't make sense to me either. I mean, United are laughing because they brought in Falcao instead, so they're doing wonders right now. But Hernandez complained about sitting on the bench at United, and did he just think he was just not going to sit on the bench at Real Madrid? Because that's exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah.
James Rodriguez, Ronaldo, Benzema. Yeah, you're going to be on the bench, big fella. So, you know, I don't get me wrong. He's going to come on and play. He'll probably play that, you know, substitute hero thing he did at United for quite a bit. But I think he's a little in over his head thinking he's going to be getting all this playing time at Madrid. But, you know, I guess I see what they do. I guess the other big one at Real Madrid on their end is really surprising. Xavi Alonso going to Bayern Munich.
Strange.
I was surprised when I read that. I didn't really think that would be a case. I guess in reality, it's basically been a cruise for Xavi Alonso swap now when you think about it.
Yeah. Which we said he'd probably be the odd man out because we couldn't see Kroos and Modric not featuring primarily in that squad.
Exactly, especially when you spend so much money, right? So, and Benatia going from Roma to Bayern as defender, as a Roma guy, shame, it's a loss, but he was so good, and Roma made a good chunk of money on him, so not too many complaints there. Marco van Ginkel as well, Chelsea to AC Milan on loan. So AC Milan reading Chelsea a lot for some loan players.
Matty, we're out of time again. It's good to be back, but it just flies by every single time.
Every week.
We'll be back again next week to go through the EPL, the other major leagues, and we'll also review some of the Euro qualifiers and friendlies that have taken place. Footy Roundup, thanks for listening.